The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, August 5th, 2022. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ryan Cooper, managing editor at the American Prospect, co-host of the Left Anchor podcast, and author of How Are You Going to Pay for That? Smart Answers to the Dumbest Question in Politics. Meanwhile, Kyrsten Sinema has reportedly agreed to the Manchin-Schumer Slim Down Climate Plus package after they scaled back taxes on the wealthy. New job numbers have come in. Unemployment is now down to 3.5%, the lowest figure since the pandemic started in 2020. Over 500,000 jobs have been added as well. So let's see the respective wage increases, though. Please.
Yep, cough it up. Cough all that CARES Act money.
Oh, yeah. The feds have charged four of the officers involved in Breonna Taylor's killing for the cover-up, not the crime, and also the falsified affidavit that allowed them to break into her apartment and commit the crime. Glad to see Merrick Garland's alive. China has announced sanctions against Nancy Pelosi for her visit to Taiwan. Election denier Carrie Lake has officially won the Republican gubernatorial primary in Arizona. Another Trump endorsement win this week. In Florida, Ron DeSantis has suspended the elected state attorney of Hillsborough County, which encompasses Tampa, for saying that he wouldn't prosecute people who seek or provide abortions and for being supportive of trans-affirming care. Georgia now says a fetus is a person by tax law. So dumb. But hopefully some people can save some money at least. The State Department of Revenue announced a $3,000 tax exemption for a fetus starting at 6 weeks. How about HOV highway lanes though, huh? Let's go. What?
I was going to say, is that contingent on you not getting an abortion later?
Oh, I guess. Right?
Just to get it for tax season. I'm sorry. It's Friday, folks.
Could be incentivizing really late-term abortions for tax
arbitrage.
Break. The jury ruled that Alex Jones has to pay a little over $4 million in compensatory damages to the Sandy Hook victims. Much lower than the plaintiffs were seeking, but there are more trials to come. Yesterday, FBI Director Chris Wray admitted in a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing that thousands of tips on Kavanaugh's sexual assault claims were sent to the Trump White House as the FBI was basically pretending to investigate those allegations. What a joke. And lastly, the Biden administration has officially declared monkeypox a public health emergency. All this and more on today's program. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's Casual Friday, and yes, it is just me today, but it's not just me, of course. I'm joined by the illustrious Matt Leck, the wonderful Bradley Alsop, and we do have Brendan Finn, who just stepped out to take
the
call.
He is here, though, in the flesh.
He has missed my shout-out, but Brendan, you know, obviously the audience knows him well. He still does some work for us here over at the Majority Report remotely, but he's visiting us in person today, and it's such a lovely treat.
Nice little Friday surprise.
Yeah, I was really happy to see him. I don't know about you. I was the happiest, obviously.
Well, I heard him talking from the hallway, and it felt like the old days.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. So once he gets back in here, maybe we'll give him a more formal shout out. But let's talk about this cinema news here, because Kyrsten Sinema has reportedly agreed to the Manchin Schumer very, very much slimmed down shadow of Build Back Better bill that has some tax incentives for climate goals, but also some not so good things for the climate that helps out Manchin's donors and probably him himself, if people look a little bit harder at the text. Regardless, though, there are some good things in there, and, you know, we have to take anything at this point, given the climate emergency that we're facing. But the big issue was that Manchin wanted the entire bill paid for, and he wanted it to cut into the deficit. That was his hobby horse. That was all of his conditions that I think were largely false, but it was a way for him to cut down Build Back Better to the less than one-ninth of what it was, which is the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, again, branded in a way that he can sell it to his constituents. But the issue is that Sinema didn't want any tax increases on the wealthy. And so Manchin requiring that, and then Sinema requiring no tax increases on the wealthy, well, it's a catch-22 for the most part. But luckily, I think they were able to get her on board by providing her with a sacrificial lamb of the carried interest loophole. So basically, Democratic leadership had to agree to drop a $14 billion tax increase on hedge fund managers and private equity executives. This is what she stands for. That was her red line. No cutting into the carried interest loophole provision. And if you were to get rid of the carried interest loophole altogether, you would save something like over $60 billion in taxes, or claw that back for the government, I should say. This was a very limited closure. It was only for $14 billion, and most instances of the usage of this loophole would have been still allowed under this part of the bill. And yet she got rid of it anyway. And a lot of smarter people than me are basically saying, yeah, they put that in there knowing that she could strike it out and then she'd get a win and she'd be able to say, hey, I'm the person standing for my private equity donors.
Yeah, it's a top line for her when she talks to donors in the future.
Yeah, and I like, you know, it fine, right? I mean, whatever gets something passed, I think, frankly, at this point. But for people that don't know, the carry interest loophole allows these private equity managers, these hedge fund executives, they classify their earnings as capital gains as opposed to just regular income. And capital gains are taxed at 20%. As opposed to the income rate for those very wealthy people at 37%. So it saves a lot of money for people in private equity and hedge fund managers. And that was a bridge too far for Kyrsten Sinema. Now, she also included some exceptions in the corporate minimum tax as a part of her conditions. So their corporations can have more deductions and avoid this 15% corporate minimum tax as well. But that the carried interest loophole was her big, you know, as I said, red line. And Laura Ingraham caught on to this. She was speaking with Senator Marsha Blackburn last night on her program. And listen to how she frames Sinema's position on this as indicative of the Democratic Party writ large and why having the Sinema and Manchin and people like them, they're necessary for now, but an excommunication of these kinds of people from the party is really necessary in the future.
Moments ago, your Senate colleague, Kyrsten Sinema, agreed to move forward with a Democrats' tax and spend bill. She could have demanded anything given her bargaining position. She chose to protect the carry interest exemption for private equity. Now, once again, the swamp wins here. I mean, the Democrats reveal themselves to be the party of the elites. Yeah. The Republicans botched it. Remember the big infrastructure bill that Senator Cassidy from Louisiana came on this show and very dismissively kind of flicked off my concern that they had just given away all their leverage. Oh, no, this makes it less likely that this nonsense is going to go through. What happens?
Then you have chips.
Who was right, Senator?
Yeah, well, you were right about this. Then you have chips. That's $300 billion. Then you have additional spending. This is going to be another $739 billion.
Oh, my God.
$313 billion in tax increases. And all of your mom and pops on Main Street are going to be affected by this because they're pass-through entities. There are taxes on ag production. There are taxes on just about everything up and down. Laura, they can't.
Wall Street always gets a sweetheart deal, though, don't they?
They do, but Main Street loses out. And in this bill, Main Street is going to lose out. Farmers are going to lose out. Families are going to lose out.
All chips, all this component parts, it's going to be coming from overseas. This is one of the biggest sellouts, and she could have been a hero. Instead, she's a zero on the senator. I'm so glad you came in.
Yeah, it's so interesting that they say that because, you know, I'm old enough to remember that Donald Trump on the campaign trail talked about eliminating the carried interest loophole. He had all chambers of Congress for 2 years, and he did tax reform. No change there. He did not close it, and that's because naturally we know that the Republicans are even more representative of private equity and Wall Street than Democrats like Kyrsten Sinema.
Yeah, they were squawking about cutting ACA at the time.
But I think from a messaging perspective, as I said earlier, this is just understand that, yes, Sinema and Manchin are necessary now to pass small things like this. They're also necessary right now to confirm judges, which is something that the Democratic Party has neglected for quite a while, and we saw what the consequences of that kind of neglect entails. And so they are insufficient and, in fact, actually bad people and bad representatives, but they're necessary for right now. Mm. But, like, just keep this in your pocket, right? These kinds of folks actually hurt the Democrats' messaging writ large because Laura Ingraham's able to make that argument with a straight face. Not that she has any other any problem lying, but it's a layup to people. Hey, look at this. This Democrat was hanging her hat on the carried interest loophole for private equity and hedge funds. All right.
Yeah, it's nice all these people talk about how great Wall Street is getting. Like, let's take some money from Wall Street and give it to Main Street. Like, we can just do that with taxes.
With that said, we're going to take a quick break, but first, a word from one of our favorite sponsors, which is over here. I had it all along. Run a business? Supercharge your knowledge, your sales, and success with Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Now, Shopify is used here at MR for awesome merch, like the Emma Jordy Report limited edition shirts, which are selling like hotcakes, folks. I just want to say, look at this, right? There we go. But Shopify helps the delivering of that kind of excellent merch.
Emma's spreading of the shirt, I think, is a little bit lacking, but I don't think you quite show the graphic off.
I'm too lazy.
Okay.
You can look it up on the internet. And I got too many things on this desk.
You can hint at it.
I got like a million beverages and a laptop and like too much going on. I'm losing papers like Sam now. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business. So upstart startups and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Shopify powers millions of businesses, including this merch part of the business here. From first sale to full scale, you can reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Plus, gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is possibility powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/majority, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/majority right now. Shopify.com/majority. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back...
We just have one. We got Sunset Lake also. That, we have to just talk about it.
Okay.
There's no copy.
It's easy for me to talk about because I use Sunset Lake every night. Because you guys gave me the sign. So Sunset Lake is pretty much the only thing that's been helping me get to sleep recently because I drink way too much caffeine, and that's probably an issue for me. But I use the tincture and sometimes the gummies, and the melatonin gummies were really the good stuff, yeah. But I'm out of those. Thank you. And I just can't recommend their product enough. SunsetLakeCBD.com. And if you use the codes left is best, you'll get 20% off anything there. If you smoke other things, you can get the CBD.
You want the smalls. Yeah, smalls are a very interesting little product line that I never really heard of before. I would like to see other people follow suit. But Sunset Lake's first people I've seen do it where the it's pre-stemmed. The stems are gone, so you just put it right in your grinder. It's nice.
Oh, convenient. Nice.
They also sell... I can't remember. Some other good stuff.
The gummies are really good. The tincture, as I say, there's tinctures with melatonin that give you that extra help for sleep. And you can get the tincture in different flavors. You can get a natural flavor. You can get a citrus flavor, which I've become very much into recently, mint, etc. But, I mean, it all tastes pretty good. You put it under your tongue, and it helps you relax. It helps you sleep. Sunset Lake CBD. .com. Use left is best for 20% off. All right. Now we will take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Ryan Cooper. We are back, and we are joined now by Ryan Cooper, who is the managing editor at The American Prospect, a must-read for everybody listening to this program, co-host of the Left Anchor podcast, and author of How Are You Going to Pay for That? Smart Answers to the Dumbest Question in Politics. Ryan, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
So, Kyrsten Sinema seems to have finally gotten what she wanted, an elimination of an even smaller carried interest tweak. And now she says she's going to go ahead with the very much reduced Build Back Better bill, which is now hilariously branded the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, because, Manchin got to decide to title it that, right? Like, what do you make of the news that happened overnight?
Some people I know on Twitter suggested some weeks ago that they had put the closing the carried interest loophole into the bill on purpose so that Sinema could take it out. What's interesting is that what they replaced it with, which is a more technical, I don't understand the details exactly, but it's basically a corporate tax hike, a small one, but it's better than closing the carried interest loophole as they had proposed to do, which is a very small, it's like $14 billion over 10 years. I mean, the carried interest loophole is totally indefensible, but it's really not that big of a deal in the broader economic context. So, you really would have, if that was their strategy, and I think it might have been, to basically give Sinema, a chit that she could take back to her hedge fund, pals at the winery or whatever, and say, look, I got you this little bonus. And then they get their Inflation Reduction Act. You do have to hand it to them, I guess.
Yeah, I'm pleased with the maneuvering. It is depressing as to what it says about the Democratic Party altogether and Sinema's role in it, I would say. But, I mean, so in terms of the new tax that you're discussing, is that different from the 15% corporate minimum tax? Details are still rolling out, so I wasn't aware of this.
Basically, they made the revenue up. I haven't looked up the details of it. Basically, they closed a couple of other loopholes that were even more indefensible than the carried interest loophole. It's again, small potatoes in the grand scheme of things, but you would have to counted, I would say, a net positive that they did one instead of the other, according to the tax nerds that I've been talking to, at least.
I mean, what do you make of this late summer surge by the Democrats here? Is there... I'm surprised that they took this opportunity to strike. I would have thought that they were scrambling to go to the lake house. But it seems like they understood that there needed to be some wins, however piecemeal, for everybody's own skin in the fall.
Yeah, it's hard to say just what happened. I mean, I'll have to admit that I was totally wrong about this. I thought that once they got the bipartisan infrastructure thing through, that was toast for Build Back Better or anything like it. That turned out to be not true at all, even though, you know, Manchin did cut, you know, relative to the original thing that was passed by the House at $3.5 trillion, they've cut that by about 90%. There's almost no welfare stuff at all in there. Nevertheless, the climate stuff is quite almost the whole thing. That's like basically all that's left, but it's almost all of it, even though Manchin got, you know, a bunch of stuff for fossil fuels in West Virginia. I think, you know, it was just like a bunch of things came together. Apparently Schumer and Manchin, you know, sort of had a decent working relationship, and Manchin's a very mercurial guy, but, you know, I think you can tell, you know, I haven't seen any polls yet showing like a big, surge in support for Biden, but like, it feels good to like accomplish stuff, you know, and they have just been knocking him out of the park over the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, it's like, it's sort of thing where momentum tends to build on itself a little bit. And, you know, I saw some political reporters saying that, you know, their sources in Congress and the White House have been mentioning Dark Brandon memes as a possible reason.
No.
No, not kidding. Benji Sarlin from MSNBC, who's a very well-sourced guy, was saying that this had something to do with it. And honestly, it's as good an explanation as any, you know.
Hey, Jack, you know, I'm cool on the internet, right? Got to do more of this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, inspire some elan, some confidence. They are some very funny memes. I will give them that. So, you know, could be.
That is really bizarre. And it is interesting, like, what these Democrats respond to, honestly. And I want to talk about Schumer a bit, because I feel like people are underselling how his motivation to pass CHIPS, like, really put a poker under his butt individually, because he's been on this China competitive semiconductor bill beat for years. This has been a pet project of his. And so I think it's instructive, like, if you get these senators to feel like there's actually a direct connection with what they pass and get them emotionally invested in it. And oftentimes that has to do with their own electoral careers, but that's harder to do in the Senate. But for Schumer, he seemed to really be motivated to get this through. And that, I think, boded well for, obviously, the Inflation Reduction Act and the shadow of Build Back Better that's likely to pass now. I mean, what's your opinion on why he kind of was so bullish on it, and how that affected these past few weeks legislatively in the Senate?
Yeah, so on the CHIPS bill, you know, it is more or less a great big handout to the semiconductor industry. You know, I would say it's better than nothing. It could have been made a lot better with more union protections and stuff like that. But, you know, honestly, the last couple of weeks has sort of demonstrated why Schumer has been so obsessed with this for so long. You know, not only during the pandemic did we see like the problem of having like all semiconductor manufacturing being concentrated in like two companies, you know, with the shortages that have driven up the price of cars and so much else. Everything's got chips in it now. Now that Pelosi is, for some reason, inflaming tensions with China, over Taiwan, which has the largest semiconductor company in the world, TSMC. It's actually kind of, you see why you would want some domestic capacity to make this stuff. But the remarkable thing about passing chips was that this is a bipartisan bill. You know, the Republicans want it too. It's like jobs and pork, basically, for them. McConnell said, Mitch McConnell, that if Democrats even talk about doing a reconstruction bill, anything that's coming out of, you know, Build Back Better, then he's going to tank the chips bill. And so, you know, when Joe Manchin, sorry, my cat is.
Yeah, it's okay. Your cat always makes an appearance every time you're on, and it's welcome.
Yeah, animals, they'll sit and sleep all day long until you start talking on an interview, and then they jump in. But so to get back to the story, Manchin announced, we all remember that, it's like, Build Back Better's done, I'm not voting for any tax increases, blah, blah, blah. And so McConnell let his guard down. He let chips through. Hours later, Manchin and Schumer just stabbed him right in the... I mean, they didn't agree to anything, but they tricked him. You know, it was a total bait and switch. And it's like, oh my God, Chuck Schumer is doing this Machiavellian maneuvering. And apparently it seems to have worked. They've got Manchin on board. Now they have Sinema on board. This weekend, apparently, they're going to vote through Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah.
And, you know, have a nice package of stuff for the midterms.
Well, so, I mean, they got one over on Mitch McConnell. Honestly, it feels like I'm having some sort of CBD-infused dream. Joking, that's for our sponsor. But, I mean, okay, so maybe it's the second time he's got in the last 2 years, right? I mean, the second COVID relief package, he had no real footing as a way to oppose that. And now with this, he was furious, I guess, it seemed that way given how the other Republican senators responded. I can't even believe that the Democrats were able to pull something like this off given their track record.
I mean, I think it's sometimes easy to overestimate the cunning of the opposition, you know, but it's inarguable that Democrats have been just absolutely helpless, you know, compared to McConnell over the last decade. You know, the other thing to mention about this is the PACT Act, which is the Veterans Healthcare Bill, another bipartisan thing. Everyone loves the troops. And this one is about specifically like veterans who got chronic conditions, cancer and whatnot from burn pits in Afghanistan and Iraq, and also Agent Orange exposures in Vietnam. And when, you know, McConnell got so mad about, you know, getting had basically on the CHIPS bill, the Republicans were going to block the Veterans Healthcare Bill. They're going to take that hostage. They're just going to block it out of spite. And that gave them like a solid 3 or 4 days of just devastating media coverage, even in like Fox News. You know, Jon Stewart was on Newsmax getting respectful interviews about how like this is a totally necessary thing. And these Republican scumbags are just, you know, they don't support the troops. I mean, it's like the third rail of politics. And so they were, not only did they vote against the troops, but then they were forced into a humiliating about face and then voted the bill through. So now Democrats get to have their cake and eat it too. You know, it's like this guy voted against the troops and we still have the bill that we are trying to pass. Like, I mean, that one, you know, as far as cunning, that was just completely stupid on the part of Republicans. And I think it tends to show you that they've gotten overconfident in their ability to just sort of do whatever they want without, you know, even thinking about it.
Yeah. So I'm curious if, and maybe this is a wishful question on my part, but what does this spell for McConnell as it relates to how the Democrats are planning to deal with him in the future? I mean, there's incredibly hope, and most people I speak to think it's maybe like 55%, 60% that the Democrats retain the Senate. If they're able to gain some confidence from this, what do you think could happen in terms of potentially maybe taking the fight to him and being a bit more aggressive? Or is this a bit of a flash in the pan given Schumer's attachment to chips?
I think, you know, it puts them in a dramatically better position, not just for the midterms, but over the next, you know, several election cycles. Because if he can hold the Senate, and now that they have like a pretty, you know, not only a pretty decent record to run on, the abortion stuff is killing Republicans. You know, we saw that in Kansas, the anti-abortion thing lost by almost 20 points. The bipartisan infrastructure bill and the Inflation Reduction Act, they both have, they set the stage for a whole lot of future fights that we can have over climate change, especially. So like the infrastructure bill has like hundreds of billions of dollars that's earmarked for like transit broadly. So you could spend it basically on highways or on like, you know, buses or electric vehicle charging stations, that sort of thing. And so which one of those is going to be picked is like a big, it's an open question. And if Republicans have anything to do with it, they're going to just like, you know, set up big mountains of coal and just set them on fire. You know, so, but now you have like a potential, like something to inspire people to get out and fight rather than, you know, just this with, this helpless, like vote harder to keep out the Republicans and we're not going to do anything. It's like, no, now we have, you know, like a slate of stuff worth fighting for and a pretty considerable accomplishment, honestly, when you think about the closeness of the margins in the Senate. Like, this is considerably more than, I think it's fair to say, was passed during the Obama Congress in 2009 to 2010.
Isn't that a shocking statement, though? Is that not a shocking statement?
Yeah.
You have something to run on or vote for, plus, let's get into the abortion discussion here. The fury on the side of Democratic voters about the Roe v. Wade reversal. I was skeptical that... Given the fact that Democrats hold power in the executive branch and in both halls of Congress, that it would connect to voters that, you know, go to the polls. And then if you elect more Democrats, not just the Democrats we have in office, then we'll protect abortion. I was really skeptical a few months ago that that would translate at all electorally. And now we have some hope. I mean, what's been your take on what we've seen?
They do seem to be coalescing around basically a promise that they'll reform the filibuster if you just give us two more senators, which is not out of the question, though it would be pretty hard. Then they can not abolish the filibuster, but amend it so that you can vote through a national abortion legalization, you know, some sort of codification of Roe. And that's just like a very simple and clear, you know, ask. It's like, we only have two holdouts. It's Manchin and Sinema. Of course it is. And everyone else is on board with that, you know, a change of the filibuster. And I think more, you know, broadly, they haven't really been messaging hard on that yet. But I think more broadly, you know, you're seeing it in the way that Republicans are talking too. They really are just the dog that caught the car on this one. You know, Republicans have been telling themselves that no, you know, like normal person ever needs an abortion. And like 99% of the time, it's someone who's like 9 months pregnant and basically is like, I don't want to have a kid. Let's just put it in the garbage, basically. And it's just like, no, that's not the reality of it at all. And I think normal, like ordinary sort of non-political people have been totally misled by decades of pro-life propaganda. You know, the reality of it is, it's a super common, super necessary thing just for the health of people who are, you know, adults or even people who want to have kids. You know, it's just miscarriages and ectopic pregnancies and other, you know, unusual medical conditions. I mean, these will kill people without abortions, even people who have wanted children. And the stories that are coming out, like the 10-year-old rape victim that they were going to, you know, force to, you know, bear the child, which is like incomprehensibly terrible. That's the reality. And it's just devastating, I think, it's devastating for the people who are forced to go through that. But it's like, oh, this is the reality. This is the pro-life utopia you want to create where, you know, like preteens have to bear their rape babies. You know, it's just horrifying.
Yeah, and it honestly, to me, it speaks to the brutality more than anything that I've been frustrated about the Democratic leadership messaging on this, where they're even reluctant to say the word abortion still to this day, and yet the horror stories that come out, like the 10-year-old, which really, honestly, I think penetrated a news cycle, and a lot of people heard about that, and there will be more. We read, I think, for maybe like a half an hour on this show, just different horror stories of a woman who was suffering a medical episode and the doctor wouldn't perform an abortion on her for fear of litigation. She sat in the bathtub and he said, as when it fills with blood or when you have a diaper that fills with blood, you can come back and then maybe we'll be able to help you. There will be more of these, 100%.
Yeah, and most people know, you know, my own sister, desperately wanted kids, did end up having two kids. She had three miscarriages and an ectopic pregnancy, almost died twice, from blood loss. And had she not, I'm not sure if it would have counted exactly as abortion care, but there's like the dilation and extraction, whatever, the procedure, the sort of abortion-like, that's also banned in a lot of these cases. She probably would have died if she had lived in one of these, you know, new conservative regimes, because, you know, it's like you don't have time to sit there and, you know, it was a question of minutes in one case. And I think, you know, yeah, you see this tactical retreat from people like Doug Mastriano, the Republican candidate for governor in Pennsylvania, you know, who was, you know, he was at January 6th, but he's also been a big time, you know, let's ban abortion, no exceptions, for years and years. And now he's just keeping mum about it, you know, which I think is, you know, it doesn't tell you that he's not going to do it. He's not going to ban abortion if he can. He just thinks it's a political loser for him to mention, you know, his actual opinions.
You talked about Pennsylvania there. I think a lot of attention is focused on that race, rightly so, partly because it feels good to have a Democrat like Fetterman, who's running his campaign in the way that he is. It's so refreshing. But I saw someone point out on Twitter, at this point in, I think in 2020, you know, everyone was convinced that Susan Collins was going to lose, and all the polling indicated that that was happening. And that threw a little bit of cold water on, I think, my confidence, I guess. Although I do think, I don't even remember, Sarah, what was the name of the candidate? Gideon?
Gideon
in Maine. Who even knows what kind of campaign she ran, right? It's not comparable to what Fetterman's doing. But, you know, is there an opportunity for some of this? I don't think this is the case, but I'm wondering if you think so. Is there an opportunity for some of this fury to cool by midterm time? And maybe it's being some of this is over reflected in certain polls.
I think it's more or less up to, you know, the candidates in the party. What I'd say about Fetterman is that he seems to be keeping, you know, the campaign on a boil, and he is talking about abortion a lot. The other thing about Gideon, If there's a candidate in the race who is like Gideon, it is Dr. Oz. She ended with like $10 million in the bank or something like that. She didn't even spend. I mean, she just raised money, and that's pretty much all she did. Dr. Oz hasn't even been buying any Facebook ads. It's like he just doesn't seem to want it at all. And he's been totally AWOL from the state, you know, and just walking right into this buzzsaw of being like a millionaire carpetbagger. I think that it'll depend on, you know, whether in states like Arizona and Pennsylvania, people can keep the focus on, because, you know, I've been watching, I live in Philadelphia. So, you know, occasionally I'll go to the bar or something and see some Josh Shapiro ads. He's the guy running against Mastriano, and they're pretty good ads as far as like making you really frightened about Mastriano, because, you know, if they win, they're going to try to abolish democracy in both of those states. You know, they're going to rig the system like they have rigged, you know, Wisconsin, where like the legislature, like legislative elections are basically fraudulent. And the Democrats can't win, you know, unless they get, you know, 70-point margin or something. And so, you know, you have the campaign question, and then just like the organic flow of terrible abortion stories, which I think are just like it's going to be a daily occurrence. It's some kind of horrifying. I don't think I've seen one yet where somebody died, but it's going to happen for sure. Yeah. And you can just say Alito killed that person. And it's just open and shut. That's what happened.
You mentioned, you were talking a bit about, you know, the election denial of Mastriano's involvement in Jan 6. And that I was just reminded of how, I guess, Carrie Lake officially won the Republican primary announced yesterday to be the Republican running in the gubernatorial election in Arizona. And there are some interesting parallels, I think, with Arizona and Pennsylvania. They're both purplish states, maybe leaning a little bit more blue, and they both have gubernatorial candidates who are vehement Trump supporters, election deniers, and the stakes for those two races could not be higher because of the ramifications of how they could rig elections going forward in those states. What's been your take on some of the rise of these candidates to being the actual Republican nominees in, like, not deep red states, but states where Democrats could potentially win going forward?
Yeah. I mean, Mastriano would be overseeing the election infrastructure. And you just like, I think it's hard to, honestly, to be as like freaked out about it as we should be. Because you see, you know, it's the springboard for creating national Jim Crow, where you have fraudulent elections, and it's the whole electoral system is just a way of like ratifying a one party dictatorship, basically. The other thing about these people is that, you know, not only are they like nuts, they are also just incredibly hateful and full of rage. Like Mastriano has been getting a lot of bad press over his association with this guy, Andrew, what's his name? The head who runs this site, Gab.
Gab, he's anti-Semitic, you know, white supremacist ties.
He's a Nazi.
Yeah.
He's a Nazi. And like, he's clearly very close friend. Mastriano briefly hired him as a consultant, you know, and he only, you know, sort of cut ties because of, you know, the bad press he was getting, but it clearly hasn't, you know, like changed his beliefs. It's just a tactical retreat. And what these people would do with permanent national power is really quite terrifying to contemplate. You know, I don't think any kind of like mass violence should be ruled out at all. You know, that was the core of the Jim Crow system, was a constant threat of violence against, you know, not only like black people, but any white people who stepped out of line. You know, a number of civil rights workers and activists who were killed during the civil rights movement were white. You know, people who come down from New York City and stuff, or Southern folks who you know, challenge the hegemony of the system. People get killed. And I don't think that type of, you know, sort of quasi-fascist, you know, kind of terror state should be ruled out as a possibility. And it's worth, you know, it's kind of unfortunate that Shapiro is the guy. He didn't even have an opponent in the primary. But he's got to win. He's got to win. There's, God help us all if he doesn't.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, hey, look, our institutions are strong, so they'll save us if these kinds of people get into power, right? The arc of history, you know, it's just, you don't got to do anything. It just bends towards towards everyone being fair and everything being just, right?
Yeah. It's funny, the people who say that a lot, like Obama, are the people who don't do the things that are necessary to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, he had an almost limitless ability to deal with the Great Recession and didn't, you know, he just like did what, Goldman Sachs CEO Hank Paulson told him to do. And it was, you know, now we are where we are, but you know, it's never too late to pull up rather, and fix things. At least it isn't yet. And so, you know, it's kind of, who knows where Republicans will go after this if they do lose. But, you know, hopefully if they constantly get swatted down by the electorate for being, you know, fascists, then maybe they'll moderate a little bit. Who knows? But that's a question for down the road.
I mean, and it's also an interesting wrinkle is when Trump announces. Is it going to be before the midterms? Is it going to be right after the midterms? Like, he's already giving semi-campaign speeches, and I wonder how that has an effect. I would imagine that it would be a gift to Democrats if he announces before the midterms, but, like, I don't know anything. I mean, who's to say? It could also energize Republicans as well.
He's another mercurial guy. If I had to guess, I would say that it will happen immediately if he gets indicted for, you know, treason against democracy. It'll be right after that. But otherwise, you know, he certainly doesn't care if it's going to benefit the party or not, because if he was going to do that, then he wouldn't run at all. But
that is right. Like, though, the saving grace of it all, right? I mean, hopefully he's, you know, he's like Gollum looking for the ring, and he gets it finally as he falls into the pits of Mordor. I'm sorry to be this dorky on a casual Friday, but like that's my hope for all this.
The other thing about Trump, though, is that he's very he doesn't sound like he did in 2016. I remember going through yesterday, I found an old tweet thread of mine that was like, when Trump starts sounding like Bernie, I get a horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. This was like March 2016.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I later talked myself out of it, but I probably shouldn't have. He doesn't, you know, back then it was like, build a wall. We're going to give everyone a good paying manufacturing job. DC is corrupt. Very simple. You know, make America great again. Now it's
drain
like,
the swamp. Everyone's corrupt but me. Right.
Like slogans we all remember. He's a really good propagandist. But when you listen to him now, it's all backwards looking grievance. You know, he's going to overturn the 2020 election. He's really mad at all the Republicans who betrayed him, and, you know, Mike Pence. And he doesn't really have a sort of positive, you know, outlook. Like his 2016 campaign, for all its like bitterness and racism, was kind of optimistic. You know, it was like, we're going to fix the problems such as they are. And now it's like, I'm going to take revenge on my enemies. you know, I wouldn't, you know, rule anything out. You know, he's still a formidable, you know, candidate. He still has a death grip on a huge number of people. But I think that that's just not a great, you know, sort of vibe, for lack of a better word.
He's really just like an insult comic, right? Like, what did he say about Larry Hogan? It's just, you know, he was gonna run for president, but he look in the mirror and he said, no thanks, like, I'm good, or something like that. I mean, yes, he's hilarious when he does that kind of stuff, and I do think he still got it to the degree of riling up a crowd, and he can get all those MAGA folks out to the polls in droves. But in a national election, it's just everything was stolen from me, right?
Yeah.
So unfair to me.
That's the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Oh, yeah. Honestly.
I'm with her. I deserve it. It's mine.
And it's my time now.
You ready for Trump?
I'm with Trump. I'm with Trump. Man, that is honestly, that was such a good point. That's such a good point, really. Making it about himself. I don't know how that translates.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, maybe he'll get his mojo back. I don't know. Or since he got COVID, he's kind of low energy.
Like maybe
he's got some chronic fatigue or something.
He did not get the best COVID. So I guess lastly, because you mentioned it, and I talked about it a bit on the show yesterday, Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan.
Oh, boy.
Like, I was shocked. I was very critical of the visit, and I got some mixed responses from some people. But to me, it was obvious that the Biden administration did not want her to go. Blinken did not want her to go. Anybody who's worked in diplomacy understood it was a bad idea. To me, this might have something to do with her financial connections via her husband to chip manufacturing. And like maybe I'm not being a conspiracy theorist, but at the very least, that's probably what was the impetus for the connection. I'm not sure. But talk a bit about what the implications are of it and why, you know, it seems like you share my perception that it was a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be fair, I think it's important to emphasize that China's claim on Taiwan is totally ridiculous. You know, that like this is clearly its own established country. It's a democracy, unlike China. You know, people in Taiwan don't want to be part of a communist dictatorship that's incredibly repressive. They have every right to exist, to continue to be a self-governing democracy. But it's also clear that China is, you know, dedicated to the theoretical, you know, like one China policy, regards as a sort of breakaway province. And, it just, to me, you know, like the reason that's most convincing to me that I've heard, you know, a lot of longtime Pelosi watchers tell me is that she's just a convinced China hawk.
Yeah.
You know? And so she's going there because she's sort of belligerent, you know, like you guys suck and we're defending Taiwan, blah, blah, blah. And it's just an incredibly inept way to do it, you know, that to barge in and, you know, poke at this incredibly sensitive, you know, wound, you know, something that the Chinese government regards as, you know, a long-standing trauma of sorts. And you see in their reaction that, like, for whatever claims however legitimate Taiwan is as a country, like the Chinese regime is maybe a little bit wacky. They are not reacting to this in a sort of like a cold-blooded, you know, realpolitik Henry Kissinger fashion. You know, they're going bug nuts over it with all these, you know, confrontational maneuvers and training exercises and stuff like that. And, you know, you see Vladimir Putin invading Ukraine, that was a totally insane thing to do, you know, and it's worked out horribly for him. But like these kind of dictatorships that can happen sometimes. And China is a much, much, much more formidable country than Russia. I think that's totally without question. And, you know, a war in this region just could not be a worse possibility for everyone in the region and everyone in the world. You know, like I was saying, they have the biggest semiconductor, company and the biggest factory in the world. And to have a big whole fight there is just nuts. And I think it tends to demonstrate that Pelosi is a elderly, out of touch, you know, doofus when it comes to international diplomacy, at least, you know,
yeah.
Someone with a little more tact.
And I wonder if Ukraine has kind of broken some people's brains to an extent where,
undoubtedly,
people like her probably think that this is a new... Well, one, I'll never forget watching Hillary Clinton on Rachel Maddow in the wake of Putin's invasion of Ukraine, kind of hinting that this could be an opportunity to weaken Putin on a national stage. And, like, I think there are a lot of ghouls and people and hawks in surrounding these kinds of folks who see American prestige declining, the U.S. empire declining. They, you know, we understand that, but they want, you know, to find the next rival or enemy as a way to prop up the United States empire as it's kind of is bleeding out, even though they may not have that same awareness of it. And so, like, this is almost Ukraine almost gave these same people a 500th wind, as the rest of us kind of understand that the U.S. is not going to be able to sustain itself in this way on the global stage anymore. But, like, they're getting this confidence from, you know, U.S. funding of weaponry in Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing where...
We are back. It finally happened. We were worried that the air conditioner would blow out the power, and it just happened.
Did on Friday. And just to note, this is the only place we're live. Sorry, folks. This will be the only place we're live today. We can't get the other streams up. What's up?
But just wanted to say thank you so much to Ryan. Thanks for staying on the line. Everyone should check out Ryan Cooper's work, managing editor at the American Prospect and co-host of the Left Anchor podcast, author of How Are You Going to Pay for That? Smart Answers to the Dumbest Questions in Politics. Ryan, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, folks. With that, we are going to probably take a break. Figure something out, right, Bradley? We're going to take a quick break. Sorry about that, guys. See you in a second. We are back. What an eventful day here at the Majority Report Studios. We're going to head into the fun half, and if this happens again, you'll understand why it did. But first, Matt, I don't even need to ask, but what's happening over on Left Reckoning?
It's a great appearance by yours truly, Emma Vigeland, and also David Griscom's got a little video essay for you today, and I might do a Lex stream. I don't know, I got some stuff going on that might preclude that, but I might do a Lex stream tonight or tomorrow, so look out for that, folks. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning.
All right. With that, we're going to head into the fun half where we will be taking your calls, I think, and then also doing some clips. See you in the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority
Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start
life. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. You gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.